I don't necessarily want everybody to be tech divers. Like, don't get me wrong, because I don't think everybody should be tech divers. In fact, some people should not be diving. I would rather give people more information than less, and I'd rather give them more tools than they would actually need.
It's episode 41 of Dive in the Podcast with special guest Dion Jones. Welcome to Dive in the Podcast, your favorite podcast about all types of diving, scuba, tech, freediving, and more. We cover it all. Every week on Monday, we post new episodes filled with diving news, interesting dive topics, ocean advocacy, and much more. To learn more about the show, find your favorite guest, or read about the hosts, be sure to check out our website, diveinpod.com. Hi, everybody. I'm Justin.
I'm Nick.
I'm April.
And I'm Amit, and we're the hosts of Dive in the Podcast.
And tonight, our broadcast is coming from back in time. We record this in 2020, and it airs in 2021. So Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. We recorded this one last year.
That's right. Here's to hoping this is a better year than 2020. So can we do that? Can we say 2020 while we're in 2020 and wish that it's better?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's appropriate. I think that's literally the only thing we can do. And we're
kind of hard to go further downhill than it's already been.
So. That's right.
Yeah. Don't say that because it'll happen.
Well, we'll start things off right. Tonight, we'll talk to Dion Jones. If anyone's met Dion, you know that he lives and breathes diving. He's a dedicated side mount, technical, and cave diver who's a passionate diving instructor constantly in the pursuit of dive excellence. He owns Direct Diver Training. He's a PADI Master instructor, advanced side mount instructor, and about 35 more instructor certifications. And we'll talk about some of those tonight with him. He's dove and taught all over the world, from South Africa to both coasts of Canada. Welcome to Dive in the Podcast, Dion. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Now, how are you doing today?
Not too bad. Normal day, you know, teaching in the morning, doing some chores in the afternoon, and now this.
And then teaching again tomorrow morning, I hear, too. No, not tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning's fun diving, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to join you on that there, Dion.
Well, we'll officially start your interview in a few minutes here, Dion. But before that, I had some episode feedback or some show feedback. One of my customers was in the shop the other day, and he was ordering some gear and commented that he really liked the podcast and enjoys the show. But he had a laugh about Weldon Wade's comments about stop counting dive gear at 50 grand. didn't get permission to share that story, so I won't name him nor call him out too bad, but you know who you are. which worries me, because I have two children, and you know what if they take up diving? Is it gonna break me? I think so.
you know what they say, right? If you don't want your kids to be doing drugs, just get them interested in tech diving.
Yeah, well, that'll cover it for sure.
They won't have any money left for drugs.
Yeah, the latter is more expensive.
That was also the drug policy at my old job, is we don't pay you enough to buy drugs. Anyway, over to the news. Dion, I've got a question for you. You've got a list of impressive certifications under your belt, but is mermaiding one of them?
Unfortunately, Justin, no. And I can honestly say it probably won't be.
No, that's okay.
You have to rush out there and get that mermaid cert? Come on now.
All right. Well, that's okay. It's not for everybody, but for those who are starting next year, you can get your basic mermaid course, your full mermaid course, even your advanced mermaid course. So, there's lots of joking that goes on, but, it could be good to kind of standardize some training for the mermaid world.
I think for most people, it will be a very clear business decision. I personally don't see myself teaching it, but I could see other people doing it. And you know, it's a tough time for dive shops, right? So if you find another revenue stream, I could totally get why people would be interested in doing that.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I actually have had already interest from one of my shop instructors would like to teach it. And an outside instructor who does them without a certification, she would like to do it as well. So There's interest in our small town. So,
but you know what? I would love to see Han Chen and the mermaid tail, though.
I would love to see. Yeah.
I would also like that.
I think he'd pull it off pretty well. Also in the news tonight, there's a trailer for a documentary called Dave Not Coming Back. on Apple TV. Link will be in our show notes. It's a hard-hitting documentary about the fateful dive in South Africa that claimed the life of Deschamps in 2005. I watched that clip earlier, and it looks really good. I guess I'm gonna have to get Apple TV to watch this.
You can borrow mine, yeah. Justin.
I can borrow yours. Good. Can I get your login? We won't tell anyone.
Yeah, you gave me your Crave login, so I'll give you my Jesus. Apple TV.
Wow.
You're going to get arrested here.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to get the Crave TV police after you.
In freediving news, there's an account called Blue Nary Academy that launched on Instagram recently, as well as the .com web domain name to go with that. Blue Nary is a brand associated with world champion French freediver Guillaume Nery, so perhaps he's launching his own school or freediving education program. So I guess we're interested to see where this is going. Watch this space.
Awesome. Thanks, Nick. That's it for today's news. It's time to dive in with Dion Jones. So Dion, you've made your home recently again in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and this time you brought your wife, Krista. But where are you originally from?
I'm from South Africa originally.
Oh, yeah. Did you grow up near the coast or spend much time near the ocean when you were growing up?
I did, probably about 60 kilometers from the coast. So it was a short skip and a jump to get to the ocean. But yeah, for the most part. And then when I went to the military, I actually went inland. So I was kind of landlocked at that point. So that's kind of where everything takes a bit of a weird turn then.
So South Africa, Dion, is known for some pretty epic dives, like the Great White Shark dives and the Sardine Run. What got you into diving?
I started diving when I was in the military. And then when I left the military eventually, I decided to take up diving in a more social way, I guess. And in 2006, I did my instructor course and then just kept on going from there. So it was kind of a natural transition from going from the military into the, I guess, the paddy realm at that point.
When did you decide that you wanted to teach people how to dive and share that passion with others?
Pretty much right after I left the military.
Yeah.
I've always been like in a teaching mode kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everybody who knows you around here knows you as the guy who's ready to teach any course at any moment at the drop of a hat. So that passion was with you early on, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
So after being in the military, what drew you to recreational instruction?
Well, at that point, there was only two main training agencies in South Africa. It was NAWI and PADI. And I was living at the coast at the time. So one of the big centers there was a PADI center. And I just went there and basically redid my open water course. And then after that, did a bunch of specialties, did my dive master course, and then the following year did my instructor course.
So what's diving like in South Africa?
It's on the west coast, it's pretty similar to here because it's still the Atlantic Ocean, right? So in the winter it can be quite brutal with all the storms that we get around the Cape. On the east coast it's a little bit more temperate because it's the Indian Ocean, so you have warm water, so between 18 and 19 degrees on the east coast, and the west coast, like similar to here.
Oh, really? Okay.
And you've also dived in Mozambique, where you worked for a bit. What's it like there?
It was pretty nice because obviously it's a little bit warmer there. It's a little bit higher up. So I worked at the Pemba Resort, which is about 120 clicks just south of the Tanzanian border, in the Karimbas Archipelago, and the diving there is pretty much phenomenal. The only downside to diving there is it's been impacted by fishing a lot. So we always had struggles like trying to bypass fishing boats that were actually fishing, I guess, illegally on the reefs, because some of the parts were protected, but it wasn't really enforced. But for the most part there, the diving is awesome, especially on some of the remoter islands that the resort had, I guess, hotels or whatever. So, and we kind of jumped between the islands. So that was pretty cool.
So is there a significant, when you talk about like the whole shark, I guess you would call it like sharks existing at a high levels there, Shark Alley and what have you, I think are all in that area. Is that a thing that people think about when they're going diving, or is that just like it's a, an afterthought?
No, I think most people, especially in South Africa, have a healthy respect for sharks. But they don't mind it because they know they're out there. So if you get to see one, that's really cool. Some of the dive spots, especially around Port Elizabeth, there are lots of ragged-toothed sharks, and people actually physically go and look for them. On the West Coast, where there are lots of great whites, people generally try not to go look for them, as you would imagine. So if you want to go and see them, you're probably better off to go and do shark cage diving or something like that. But they're definitely around. And I'm pretty sure by the time you spot one, you've already been spotted by it a long time ago. So you just have to be aware that they are there and don't do stupid things, I guess.
It's, I mean, it's a little bit like Nova Scotia, right? We have sharks, not in as great numbers, but if you're going to see one, it's probably going to see you before you see it.
Yeah, for sure.
How did you end up diving in Canada?
Well, I actually applied for a job in Vancouver, and then I got it. So I just moved here because I had a job opportunity in Vancouver at Great Pacific Diving at the point, actually. So I started diving in Vancouver, but before that, I went to the Yukon for 9 months, and I actually ended up volunteering there at a ski resort. And so my first actual dive in Canada was in a lake in a wetsuit, which, well, I didn't have a dry suit at the point. So yeah, that was it.
Did you, so you also taught in Mexico. Was that in between South Africa and Canada?
Yes, it was. I was actually working in Mexico, and then I decided I wanted to do something else. And I actually had my eye on Thailand because I heard that there was a cave diving program there that you could do. And then I, funny enough, saw on the PADI website that there was an instructor position open in Mexico. And I decided to apply because I heard some good things about the cave diving there, but I didn't really investigate too much. And then I got the job offer. And within about a month, I got all my visas and stuff sorted out, packed my bags, and there I went and ended up in Mexico. And I ended up staying there for a long time. And I actually went and did my cave course there, which was also a requirement, I guess, for me working at the shop because we were guiding in the cabins. So, yeah, that was a really cool experience. And I really do like Mexico, especially the cave systems there. So whenever I get a chance, I go back. In fact, we were supposed to be there in September for 2 weeks doing cave camp. But because of COVID, unfortunately, that'll have to be next year.
Tell me a little bit about this cave camp. What's that all about?
So Cave Camp is actually run by Underworld Tulum, by Lanny and Claire Fogel. They're expats from the UK. And I think this is the fifth year that they've actually put it together. So it's basically a bunch of divers that sign up for it, obviously cave divers. And if you're not, you can do a course while you're there. But they basically get together a bunch of instructors. They put on seminars and workshops. And in that week that you are there, you can go on guided dives. You can do training. Anything cave diving related, it's there. So I think last year, like Gary Dulles was there. So there are some big names that go there. And it's an awesome experience for sharing information and learning from just like great cave divers from around the world.
That sounds like it'd be something else. Might have to try to figure out a way to come on that, Dion.
Well, I've mentioned to you a few times that if you get your stuff sorted out, then we can go there and we can do stuff like that, you know?
Oh, man. Like, you're really hurting me right now. Like, you know, while that was your plan to be there, I had plans to be elsewhere. And both of those plans like would have possibly culminated in me next year being able to go. But now this bloody COVID is just ruining it all, man. It's ruining it
all. We can still do it. When Chris and I go for fun dives, you can be doing your course. You know that, right?
Yeah, that's, you know what, that's not out of the loop for me. I guess, like, the thing is, like, I just have to be able to travel, and the one agreement that I have with my significant other is that if I'm going there to do something like that, she's better be going there as well to do something like relaxing on a beach. So.
Yeah, well, you can definitely do that there, that's for sure.
We'll add it to our tour of destinations we're going to once the world opens up again.
The dive in the podcast world tour.
Mm-hmm.
So Dion, you'd mentioned like that obviously you'd spent a whole bunch of time in Mexico. while you were there? Like, so beyond your cave diving, was there other stuff that you were doing while you were in Mexico as far as instructing or even unrelated to diving?
No, I was in Mexico for diving, and I pretty much did that, well, I guess 7 days a week, because I was working at a resort. So typically what we did, we had tourists or guests come in, either certified or not certified, and then we would do discover scuba diving with them on a regular basis. People that came in for guided dives, we would take them out on the reefs and do that. So we would also run courses in between. So you could do anything from open water courses, advanced courses, or specialties or whatever. And then a lot of guests that came to the resort were also cave divers. So then they would go cave diving and then we would guide them. Or a lot of people that were open water divers or like used to diving in the ocean, we would then introduce them to the caverns and then take them on cavern tours. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the caverns in the Tulum area, or actually between the Tulum and Playa area, are accessible to people with just scuba diver certification because you're still in the cavern zone. And then all the caverns are lined, and we just guide them following the lines according to the rules.
We're going to take a quick break here, Dion. We're teaching and teaching philosophy.
Sounds good.
Hi, everyone. I just wanted to take a second to thank our sponsor, Torpedo Rays Scuba. Torpedo Rays is a local dive shop in Nova Scotia. If you're not in Nova Scotia, that's okay. They've got a wonderful website, torpedorays.com, TORPEDORAYS.com. All of the scuba gear you could ever need is there. If you can't find it, give Jason a call, 902-481-0444, and he'll be happy to help you out. And in these challenging times, it's always great to shop local. Don't go to a huge, big box. Help support your local dive shop. Buy something you've had your eye on. Excellent time to make a good deal. Buy a gift certificate to use later. Whatever the case may be, Torpedo Rays and torpedorays.com will be there for you. Once again, their number is 902-481-0444 or torpedorays.com.
You're listening to Dive in the Podcast. We're here with Dion Jones. So Dion, if we could count them, you have like over 40 instructor ratings across TDI, SDI, NAWI, PADI, too many to mention here. So you must clearly love teaching.
I do, yes. And I also think that any good instructor should, from time to time, go and look and reevaluate where they are within the teaching realm. And if you're not happy at where you are, maybe you need to change. So that's why I decided to move back and forth between agencies as well, because some agencies, as far as I'm concerned, have better programs when it comes to certain things. So just for me personally, just to get more information and experience, I just decided to do some crossovers as well. So I could definitely recommend that, because if you're stuck in one position, then, you know, you only know what you know, and you don't know what you don't know, right?
Exactly.
It's a little bit like being stuck into one type of diving, right? How would you describe teaching so fundamental to what you do and means a lot to you? You've clearly developed a teaching philosophy over the years. How would you describe that philosophy?
Well, I basically feel that in every diver, there's a tech diver that's just waiting to get out, right? So why start teaching somebody open water a certain way only for them to change down the road? So I think everybody should get the same kind of training within the rules and the standards for normal open water. But there's nothing wrong with telling people, if you do this, then you can do X, Y, and Z later on. Little things like getting people to trim their gear or streamline their gear without having stuff floating around all over the place, which seems to be acceptable in a lot of places. I don't necessarily agree with that. There are definitely better ways to deal with equipment, things like buddy checks and stuff like that, that sometimes falls by the wayside. I actually spoke to a guy this morning, like one of my sideline students, and asked, when was the last time you did a buddy check? Like BWRAF. And he looked at me and he was like, I don't know. And that's a simple example of something that we, as sideman divers, do on every dive. Like, we do something that's called equipment matching. So we physically do a check from top to bottom. We go through everything. We cover the equipment. We cover dive plan, gases, and all of that, which I think is a fundamental thing that everybody needs to do. But a lot of recreational divers, unfortunately, don't feel the need for that. And with that comes complacency. And then eventually you get people that get hurt because they get into accidents.
So, Dion, why is the approach you take to teaching so important? So you want everybody just right away to be tech divers and have that kind of experience. Like, why do you see it that way?
I don't necessarily want everybody to be tech divers. Like, don't get me wrong, because I don't think everybody should be tech divers. In fact, some people should not be diving. but, you know, I would rather give people more information than less. And I'd rather give them more tools than they would actually need. So to give you another example, in the DIR realm, people dive with a long hose and a short hose. So I would personally think it would be better if everybody dives with a long hose, because when you're sharing gas, then it makes it easier. There's a lot less things that can go wrong. Like, I'm sure that you've seen it, April, like on dives, where people are dragging the alternative air sources through the mud or through the seaweed and stuff like that. And then
never seen that.
Nobody cares. Like, nobody right. holds anybody accountable, because we are just having fun, right? We're in 10 feet of water, so what could possibly go wrong? For me, it's more a mindset. So if I teach open water students about sharing gas, then it's because I care about it. Same thing with buoyancy, trim, propulsion. Like, I'm pretty anal when it comes to buoyancy and trim, because for me that is really important. You can't be a diver, as far as I'm concerned, if you don't have good buoyancy and good trim, and with that comes propulsion. So instead of teaching students the normal open water or the flutter kick, why not teach them other skills like a frog kick or even a modified frog kick or something like that? Because all good instructors should be able to do those propulsion techniques. So why not teach the students that? And then they can decide what they prefer and whatnot. But if you only teach them one thing, then they won't know. They'll only know that one thing. So basically what I'm saying is, I think us as instructors, because we're all instructors here, we have a responsibility to our students to give them as much information and good information as possible. If we don't, then we should maybe reconsider the part-time profession that we chose, or for some of us, the full-time profession. Because if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well, right? So why not go the extra mile? Like, give them the information. Set a good example. When you're demonstrating skills in the pool, be neutrally buoyant. Don't be on your knees. We are creating this generation of divers that think it's okay to be kneeling on the bottom of a pool or the ocean. And if something goes wrong, that's going to be their go-to. Oh, I need to go down on my knees to fix this problem, which is not the case. That's not diving.
Yeah, I can certainly relate to that, growing up on an island where, you know, the resort diving was the go-to. And similarly for freediving, I've had to relearn a lot of things over the years. I just wanted to follow up with something you said, that which is a bold statement, and I think some of us here would agree. Like, some people, you said some people shouldn't even be diving. That's quite a bold statement. Why do you say that?
There are some people that really want to dive because they like to do it. Right? It's always been their passion, and I have all the time in the world for people like that. But some people, and I know some people like that, they started diving because their significant other started diving, or they were kind of pressured into that. And they don't really want to do it, but they're doing it just to be accepted by either their partner or by their friends. And I don't think that divers like that should be diving, because if you don't have this passion for it, or if you're not serious about it, then maybe do something else. Because unfortunately, it's not a cheap sport. So if you're going to be spending money and investing your time to get the training and buy the equipment, then it's got to be worth it, right? I know lots of people that have a dive certification, they have all the equipment, but they haven't dived in years. So I think they're doing themselves an injustice, I guess. And the other thing is also, if you have people that are not passionate about it or that don't really care, they never progress. And they would eventually, I would say, be more likely to get into trouble because they're not keeping their skills up to date. They're not keeping up with new practices. So for the once or twice that they go diving, they're either relying on somebody to put their gear together or hold their hand while they're doing a dive. And if something goes wrong, hopefully there will be somebody around to help them out, or they might be in trouble. And I take Vancouver or British Columbia as an example. There are a lot of divers there. There's a lot of training that gets done there. And unfortunately, there are also fatalities there. And sometimes it's either on training courses or it's just random accidents that happen. And who knows why that happened? It could be accomplished divers. And there has been accidents with accomplished divers, but, you know, it just happens. It just happened to be their day. But I also think a lot of times people are putting themselves in unnecessary danger because they don't have the skills to do those specific dives. People get bent on a regular basis because they're basically going out of their comfort zone unnecessarily without the proper training.
Yeah, and I think too, like as instructors, we've all been in the position where you have the student and they're not meeting the requirements. And this could not even be open water. This could be advanced or rescue. And like, there's a part of you that feels for them like, oh man, they're doing this course, but like, I just can't, like, you know, let this student pass this course. Like, they're just not ready. But I think, like, in the long run, it's way better for the student to just be like, have that difficult conversation and just be like, I'm sorry, but you're not ready. Like, you need more practice.
April, I agree with you 100%. And I've done it before where I just refuse to certify a student and I explain to them why. But I'm the first person, after telling someone, I don't think you're ready to get certified, I'm the first person that will say, I will take all the time that you need and I will put in the extra time to go with them. And I will try my best to get them through whatever obstacles they've got and work through the problems and come up with solutions. But I don't think that we should just sign off on people when they're not ready. And unfortunately, I'm not going to name any agencies, but in certain parts of the world, there are agencies that they basically just push people through because that's their business model. And I don't think as instructors, we should fall into that category. Like, we should be held at a higher standard. And the same thing, being instructors, we have a responsibility to our students to give them the best possible training. If it means going the extra mile, for sure. Having said that, I think that we should all teach what we're qualified to teach. And just because you have a certification does not necessarily mean you can teach that course. So if you've taken a course and you have been out of the water or you haven't done those specific dives for any number of years or months even, well, maybe not months because you can go back and you can practice, but if you finish the course, and 6 years later, now all of a sudden you decide you're going to teach that course, I don't think that's definitely the way to go. And I would be questioning, if I was a student, I would be questioning my instructor and saying, when was the last time you did a sideman dive? Or when was the last time you did a tech dive? Or when was the last time you did any kind of dive? And if they can't tell you without flinching, oh, I did this yesterday, or I did that last week, or no, this and that and that, then I don't know if I would want to be doing training with that person.
That's almost like how an instructor looks at a student's logbook. Students should almost be allowed to do the opposite and look at their instructor's logbook.
That's a good point. Unfortunately, I won't qualify because I haven't kept a logbook in years. So I don't have a logbook. Oh, no.
The Paddy police will be after you shortly.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, I can always pull up my computer, so I guess I can download them, but I don't keep a physical log anymore. I know some people that actually do, but also I dive with enough people that actually see me in the water that can vouch for me. So I mean, that's also a thing.
We can vouch for you.
Thanks.
We've talked about a lot of your teaching philosophy and what you sort of the standards you set for yourself as an instructor. What do you expect of students when they come on a course with you?
Well, number one, they need to be want to be there. So, they shouldn't be like forced into doing the course. If somebody asks me to do a course, then if I don't know that person, I will always do a dive with them first to see where they're at. And I also try and like to, or I'd like to get a feel for where they are within their diving and their skills so that I can better help them with their training. So somebody needs to really bring their A game because I'm going to give 110%. So I would expect nothing less. If that means I have to work harder for them to get their A game up, then for sure I will do that. But people will definitely need to come with a positive attitude, open-minded for sure. Especially some of the courses that I teach, there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of stuff on YouTube. There's a lot of good instructors that put a bunch of really good stuff out there that people can go and look at and research. So the downside to having all that information is they've only maybe seen stuff on YouTube, but they've never really put it into practice. So it's sometimes hard to get people to do a certain thing a certain way just because they have this already pre-made up mind or thing in their head about this is what it's going to be like. But to get to that point, maybe you have to do a bunch of other steps. So sometimes that's a little bit hard. But at the end of the day, people with a good attitude, open mind, that's pretty much all I need.
So, Dion, now we got to turn the tables a little bit here. You know it was going to come down this road at some point. But side mount's your favorite approach to diving. What about that appeals to you so much?
Well, just for the record, I do like backmount diving as well. If I need to do it, I will. But I prefer not to. But for side mount, for me personally, it's just it's a versatile way of diving. I can express myself a lot better diving side mount. And I can also personalize my equipment the way I want to. So I personally prefer a very minimalistic setup. So that's what I like to do. Side mount can take me into places where back mount divers cannot necessarily go. I can push myself further and deeper into things where I wouldn't necessarily be able to go with back mount. So whenever I do dives where I push myself and test my skills, that's a reward for me. So a while back, I heard somebody refer to me as a character because I'm always like training, 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 teaching, training, 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 practice, 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 which is fine because that's what I'm all about, right? The more I practice, the better I get. And if I start feeling that I'm plateauing, then I need to find something else. So then I add another tank, or I take a fin off, or I do something weird to take myself out of that comfort zone, and then I work myself back into where I'm comfortable, and then I can go further. So for me, it's always a case of trying to make myself better, improving my own skills, and, you know, I mean, as you know, side mount just looks cool, right? So everybody at one point wants that. To look cool.
Let's just call it what it is, right? Like, I still remember,
I have the
actually.
To prove it.
And I remember that first time, actually. I think it was you, me, and Krista had gone for that dive. I don't know if I brought my A game that first dive. Might have been my D or E or F game at the point that we were out for a dive. But I recall turning around. And it was the first time in Nova Scotia that I had been in the water with other side mount divers. And, you know, I look at the profile of both you guys trimmed out with your three cylinders were coming out of 130 feet or so. And I was just like in absolute joy, right? I was like, wow, this is incredible for me to turn around and see other like-minded people diving in a such a cool looking profile. So, yeah, anyhow, I'll stray away a bit from that. But cave diving is another passion of yours. Right. So on top of your side mount diving, which obviously both of them kind of go hand in hand, why caves? Why'd you decide to go to that route?
You know, the thing with cave diving is depending on where you go, there are not that many people in them. Like if you go to like the really popular ones, you might see a bunch of lights coming back and forth and other teams exiting and entering the cave. But for the most part, it's just you and maybe the other people in your team And I'm not really a people person, contrary to popular belief. So I like to do dives where I can just be on my own and maybe Krista with me. So the thing about cave diving is, I guess it's one of the most dangerous things, or one of the most dangerous sports you can do. Because if something goes wrong in a cave, it really goes wrong. And you really have to have your stuff together, right? So for me personally, that is the appeal. I need to be able to plan my dive, execute the dive, and if something goes wrong in between, I either had to think about that before or be able to deal with it quickly and safely. So I guess for me, every time I go cave diving, it's a personal test for my skills. So am I able to do this dive? And am I able to go further, take stages with, go even deeper into the caves? I think it's all cave divers feel like that. It's other than it's a lot of fun, it's also testing yourself and see how you would react if the lights all of a sudden go out, or if somebody kicks up the silt and you come back and you have to exit through a section that's silted out. Can you remain calm? Does your breathing change? So, but you'll see when you do it, Amit.
Oh, it's definitely on the bucket list there, no question. And I'm hoping it happens sooner rather than later. But, you know, I think you and I probably share, I think, a similar approach to how we drill. And I guess, you know, I view that statement of people saying, like, you know, either you're a character, I'd fall into the same realm, where basically my philosophy is that, yeah, if that makes me a character as a person that wants to drill something until I know it inside out and backwards, well, then so be it. But I think that philosophy is really what pushes me in the same direction as you. And, you know, toward that end, I think when I first met you, you had thrown out a phrase that I quite liked when you arrived here in Nova Scotia. And I said, like, yeah, this is great. You know, can we do this tech diving course together? And, you know, you said yes. And you said, sure thing. We're building the army one diver at a time. What are you really trying to work towards, you know, when you make that statement?
Well, when I go to bed at night and I close my eyes, I think, how wonderful would it be if everybody in the world dives inside round, right? And that's been a running joke for a long time. And I'm not all about side mount. I do like it. And you have to remember, side mount diving is just a gear configuration, right? Mm-hmm. But it brings a certain element of discipline that I think normal recreational single tank back mount divers don't necessarily get. And Justin might remember when I first got here, I was really trying to push side mount because it wasn't that known yet. And I was like really passionate about it. And I got into arguments with people like, why don't you want to try it, man? You got to try it at least once. Like, right. Don't knock it before you haven't tried it. And over time, I've kind of let go of that idea because it's not for everyone, right? Mm-hmm. Some people have been diving for years and years and they're happy with their single tank, their snorkel, dragging their octo through the sand. And, you know, they have no sense of buoyancy, but that's fine because they're out there having fun.
All those examples you mentioned, right? It's still an issue from a safety point of view, and how well, you know, how well you can deal with issues. So yes, they may be having fun, but there's still an element of risk that's maybe not necessary.
Yeah, that's true. And unfortunately, I don't know if it's a good quality, but I tend to call people out on stuff like that, and not everybody likes that. But I think we should be holding each other accountable. If you see something that is wrong, and that might just be your perception, so you need to start the conversation and say, listen, why are you doing that? And I like to ask people, why do you do that? Why do you do that? Because is that how you were taught, or is that something that you thought out, or is that just something that you decided you're going to do? And if you give me a reason, then fine. If you decided to have whatever gear on your system or whatever, then that's fine. But if you say, well, that's just the way I've been doing it for years, then I think maybe you have to go and rethink the way you've been doing things for X amount of years now. So diving is a progressive sport. There's always new equipment coming out, always new techniques coming out. Things are getting safer, things are getting refined, and we need to keep up with the times. And if that means diving into specific configurations to do a specific task, then so be it. I'm not saying everybody should be in sideman, because sideman does not fit everywhere. It's not applicable to every dive situation, but there's definitely more benefits to it. But there's nothing wrong with diving a single tank or twins, as long as you've got the skills and you keep your skills sharp to be doing those dives safely. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if we can have an army of sideman divers, only if that army is only 20 guys, that'll be great, especially in Nova Scotia. There's a lot of sideman divers on the West Coast, actually. Like, a lot of people are diving sideman around the Vancouver area, which is great.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. There's at least four or five of us now, so.
I was scared Dion wouldn't want to be my friend when I found out I was back mount diver, but.
April, but you know, it's all good and well, because everybody on this podcast are sideman divers except you. So maybe in the new year, like, we can get you converted. How about that?
She just got the whole podcast team onto being Shearwater, so I'm sure the natural follow-up is sideman cert.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll try it out. Who knows? Maybe I'll make the switch. Who knows?
Well, you don't have to switch, because you can't just take your backmount gear and throw it out the window, because at some point you're going to have to go back into a pool and
that's
teach you open water gear, right? So that means
that's true. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
funny enough. I went into the store the other day. and I actually went and bought a wing, because I still have back plates and I have manifolds and stuff like that. But I figured if I'm going to be teaching maybe the odd open water course or something, that I need to be in the pool, I actually need to be in gear, and I don't necessarily want to go and rent gear or use the rental gear from the shop. So I went and bought a wing. So at least when I'm teaching an open water course, I will be in the gear that I would like people to eventually dive in, which is a backplate and a wing.
Yeah.
So let it be known that I do dive in backmount.
Yeah, wow. I was there.
On special occasions
I saw
only.
By it.
So Dion, where can people look you up online?
Online, I've got a bit of a website going on. It's not very interactive, but Direct Diver Training is the website. I'm also, I've got an account on Instagram and Facebook, and I just post the stuff that I do. I post that there, and if people are interested in doing specific courses that is not necessarily paddy courses, they can just send me a text. I'm in the shop on a regular basis, because I am affiliated with Torpedo Rays as well. Yeah, you can just hit me up.
Well, Dion, what keeps you diving?
My wife, actually. because she has a real passion for diving. And I'm very fortunate to be able to be diving with her. And she would go diving whenever she can. And sometimes I would say, well, the weather looks kind of crappy outside. And she's like, no, we got to go. Because she has a problem like that. So she's the one that keeps me going. And it's my time to reboot. Whenever I put my gear on and I go for a dive, whether I'm teaching, I do love teaching, but sometimes I just go for a dive and that's when I just shut everything down and I just take stock of where I am, what am I doing, how fortunate I am to be able to be diving, because I think everybody that dives are quite fortunate. That's what keeps me going, man.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a privilege to be able to be underwater and definitely hit that reboot. And I wish everybody could be there and do it.
Yeah, that's definitely a theme that's come up a few times with different guests, right?
All right. Well, thank you, Dion, for that. We had a special guest join us for this week's Deco Stop. Mitt, why don't you give us the quick rundown of what we're going to listen to in a second?
Yeah, so normally we've been going through the segments here where we have a little chat about some part of decompression diving and or technical diving, just to get everybody up to speed on what that might be. But we were actually pretty fortunate again to have Dr. Neil Pollock join. join us for a quick segment of DecoStop. And in that, we're, you know, I mean, I don't want to give away too much, but we're just going to chat a little bit about what diving research is, why diving research in Canada is important, and how people can maybe support that, so that all this information that allows us to do the super cool things that we want to do as tech divers is here and available and relevant and can help keep us safe. So that's what we're going to chat a bit about in the DecoStop segment. All right, so this week on DecoStop, we had promised some of you guys special segments with Dr. Neil Pollock, and we're super excited to have him back here for the first inaugural episode of 2021. And so, Dr. Pollock, I was wondering, one of the things that we had spoken about, and we kind of put a little bit of a promo out about during one of the last episodes, was the research chair position over at the Université of Laval. Are you able to give a little bit of a background on that that research chair position and how you see that as supporting diving and decompression research for Canadian divers and divers around the world?
I can. University Laval was, in my mind, forward-thinking when there was a new chamber built in Lévis, which is now the state-of-the-art hyperbaric center in Canada. They decided that they wanted to also push the research side. And so they established this chair in both hyperbaric and diving medicine. And the idea here is it's split. We deal with a hyperbaric side, which some divers might say, why do I care about that? Well, the reason they need to care about that is because the diving care is a small portion of the effort a chamber has to put out to stay alive. And so if you're not supporting hyperbaric medicine, there'll be no chambers to support the divers. And so we've got the hyperbaric side that we're developing, and then we've also got the diving medicine side. And for me, the diving medicine side is fantastic because when I left Canada, this was the reason I left, that we didn't have the opportunity in Canada that we had in the US. And to have it now open and the invitation to come back makes it really quite exciting. So we also have the ability to focus on problems that are both relevant internationally, but very focused on the Canadian experience, like cold water. With the opening of the Northwest Passage, we can expect more and more remote diving activity on people who are exposed to a variety of environmental stressors, diving, but then also the supportive diving, the cold environmental conditions. And there are implications there that are worthy of support that they might not get the attention in Panama City, Florida. Panama City, Florida, they think of 28 degrees seawater as cold. And that creates just a little bit of a bias that I think it's useful if we're able to counter.
Yeah, I do. I mean, there's obviously a lot of cold water divers in different parts of the world too. I have a question though. You know, if we take the average recreational scuba diver, you know, all that stuff kind of seems somewhere far up above what they might be used to or seems so far away. Why should a regular recreational diver care, or even a tech diver?
The biggest reason to care is to make sure that you get good information. We have a problem with a lot of the people who are well-intended, but they write articles that they really don't have a great handle on. And I read one today. There was an article that was talking about divers shouldn't give up diving. They should consider diving in the cold, but when they're in water that's colder than 50 degrees Fahrenheit, which is, you know, 10 degrees Celsius, they should put themselves in the water slowly and they should be prepared for hypothermia, and immediately post-dive, they should actively feed to rewarm. And the reality is, with diving equipment, hypothermia is not a problem. So what we have is we have somebody who's well-intentioned, but they're writing this article about cold water that is completely misleading. One of the advantages of having a center of research experience is that people who want to write things can consult, or there's always that check over what's being written. And so what goes out to the diver ends up being a little bit more credible.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, I guess. And I guess in our circumstance here, would you say that some of the research that you'd be looking to direct would be specific to sort of the Canadian context of this cold water diving and how we can, you know, how we can help that? Or is it going to be more broad research, sort of like the The stuff that you'd spoken to us about in your last interview, where you're dealing with like sort of the issues at NASA and these sorts of things.
Well, the core application is broad, but again, the focus specific to the type of diving here becomes a little bit more nuanced. So let's go back to the thermal question, because that is the big one. The degree of thermal stress a diver feels will have direct and dramatic impact on their decompression stress. And so by looking at exposure profiles that are more typical for the Canadian experience, we're getting data that wouldn't be available elsewhere, because a lot of research is done in warmer water. And so they just, the reality ends here. It's sort of the maps end here and you fall off the edge of the earth. You can extrapolate and assume that everything's linear, but the reality is we need the exposures that are typical for our kind of diving. And so that's where the nuance comes in. And the funding applications, proposals we put out are addressing this. One of our sponsors has been Réseau Québec Maritime, which is very interested in supporting research that's relevant to the Quebec and I'll say to the Canadian experience. Well, we can look at the health and safety of cold water divers, and that is good for them because it's useful for professional divers, recreational divers, and it's really good for divers across the country. Because whether you're diving in Newfoundland or British Columbia seasonally, you have that cold water. And so your experience is different from what the warm water diver is going to be subject to.
Well, Neil, how can these average divers and everybody else, where can they go to help this process out?
Yeah, if they're interested in funding, well, one of the first things they should do is, of course, encourage whatever shop or community they're with to try to make sure they get the highest level information possible. And when there's a push for more information, there is then an increased justification to do the relevant work. And so the first thing they have to do is ask questions and express interest. In terms of supporting this research chair, which is our most visible means of supporting diving research in Canada, anyone who wants to donate money to the chair program is welcome to do so. And that will go directly to supporting research and graduate students who are involved in diving research.
Well, we appreciate you joining us back on the episode, Neil, for this checkup, and look forward to next time we have you.
Well, it's always a pleasure.
The theme that Neil always hits on is asking questions. And he wants people to ask questions, and he wants people to ask their instructors questions, and he wants people to ask, look things up. That research is so important. Thinking back to that last interview we did with him, where we're taking information that they learned doing research for how to keep astronauts from getting bent, for how to walk up the rocky shoreline at Birchie.
Yeah.
It's all tied in. It's not, how's that going to affect me? It's not, how's this research going to help me? It's how could it not help me?
Yeah. And I think that's why it's really important to kind of support this stuff. And if you look at that, like there are a number of guests that we've had who talked about like the necessary, I guess, the need to go back and translate information, right? Because like, let's face it, this stuff can be really technical and heavy, but it's how do you then turn that information around and make it practicable for people who are going out there to get things done and just to do what we all love to do. And I think if we don't support folks like that, we're really going to have a rough go overall in terms of advancing our abilities to dive. And yeah, we've seen it with Underwater Pat. We've seen it with other guests on the show. And I think it's really cool to have.
Most definitely. All right. Well, thanks again for setting that up, Amit. And now we'll head over to Nick for this week's book recommendation.
Our book recommendation this episode is Oceanographic Magazine's Ocean Photography Awards Volume 1. It's a book that they just recently published that features all 100 images from this year's photo competition that they had in a beautiful limited edition hardback book. So it's ocean art that you can take it home. It'll last your lifetime. And some really, really striking and fascinating images. I believe it's a limited edition run, because I just said that. Yep. it's available from Oceanographic magazine for £30, and you better grab yours now before they're all gone.
It looks like a really nice book. Oh wow! You literally
have it right there.
Nick's slamming it into his microphone, right? As we speak.
Can I borrow it?
You can. Yeah. Can it's pretty them? Awesome.
Well, awesome. Thank you, Nick. Maybe get a copy for myself. That does it for today's episode. I want to thank you, Dion, for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being here.
Pleasure was all ours. And I also, of course, can't forget to thank my co-host, Amit.
Very happy to be here, as always. And Dion, from from a guy that had only heard of you in Legend before, I got to tell you, coming in and meeting you finally and getting a chance to start off my tech diving career with you as an instructor, greatly appreciated. I think most of your philosophies I tend to share, and some of them I've adopted. So yeah, thank you very much for that. And and always raising the bar to another level with diving, because I think that's what's necessary for us to get better. And you need guys like you out there pushing that bar really high so that other guys like me will continue to do the same thing. So appreciate that. Appreciate you sharing your time with us.
And April, thanks for being here.
Yep, thanks for having me. Always glad to podcast, and I look forward to diving with Dion, and who knows, maybe in side mode sometime.
not maybe.
And last but not least, tonight, Nick, thanks for everything.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Dion, it's been a pleasure to see you again, move back at this side of the country. And I think I'm not the only one to say that we're excited to have you back in the dive community, and also happy to have met and dived with your wife, Krista, who's also a wonderful addition to community. So looking forward to many more dives with you.
Yeah, me too. Thanks.
And just before we go, I have to clear up one point. That was me who called Dion a character a while back.
I think he knew that.
Of the previous episodes. I knew Dion knew that, but I was just pointing out that Dion is a character in the way that somebody, is fun to talk to and is always good for a good time. Back when Dion was here before he left last time, a few years back, if it wasn't diving, there was always a night out, or a group, this or something going on. So, he's a character. He's a good guy. I mean that with my heart, and happy to have you back, Dion.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks.
No problem. You can follow the show on Instagram and Facebook with @DiveInPod. Our email is diveinthepodcast@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, www.diveinpod.com. On the website, you'll find episodes, details on recurring segments, merch, and much more. On social media, you can follow me at iDiveOK. April's at April Weichert. Nick is at Nicholas Winkler Photography. You can find links for everything we mentioned on today's episode in the show notes or on our website, diveinpod.com. Next week, we speak to Sandra Klopp, an accomplished deep and cave rebreather diver, technical dive instructor, and owner of Urban Manta, Scuba, New York City. This episode of Dive in the Podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Torpedo Race Scuba. Head over to your favorite podcast app to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It's very much appreciated. Thanks for listening.